for Hoopla and Hootenanny. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 142, and of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your joyful, jumping, jesters, jabbering,
Joyfully?
Jazz apples?
Jubilee? Jazz apples? Jazz apples?
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
We're back!
Yay! Your voice sounds good.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Yes. We're back. We went on a sudden emergency hiatus for the last month because I lost my voice for that long.
Your poor voice. We went to, Karen and I went to go see Animaniacs Live. The voice actors from Animaniacs were
all there. And the songwriter.
And the songwriter, which was a big surprise. And so they performed a lot of the songs from Animaniacs, which was so... It was so formative for us as young nerds, songs that help you memorize the names of countries and things of that nature. And Karen got to meet veteran voice actress Tress McNeil, who is every voice in every cartoon.
Futurama
Simpsons. And The Simpsons, and she's Dot from Animaniacs, and Karen couldn't talk, so I had to do all of her talking for her. But Tress McNeil gave Karen a throat lozenge.
So
you know what? And she still has it to this day.
Karen can sell it on eBay.
All right, and also during the hiatus, I went to check our Good Job Brain mailbox, our P.O. box, and we got some cool surprises, including this one from... Kung Fu Jimmy sent us two issues of his magazine called Organ Grinder, and he said, "Dear friends, I was told about GJB about 5 months ago and have since burnt through the entire catalog. If you're half as entertained by my magazine as I am by your podcast, I'll be flattered to no end."
Oh, we are super entertained by your magazine.
Yes, we're very passing around issues of Organ Grinder, which is a... each issue says no kids on the cover. Yeah, there's some dirty jokes in
there. There's bad words in there.
Yeah, a little bit.
Adult concepts.
It's like an adult activity book.
It's like Games Magazine. It's full of puzzles and... Yeah, exactly.
Brain teasers, puzzles.
For adults. Yeah. Quizzes and things like that. It is very cool.
Recommended.
There's one called... One Off Broadway in here. I'll read a couple of these questions because it's pretty good. It's each of these famous Broadway musical titles has lost one letter. Figure out the new title based on the synopsis. So, for example, a large-lobed glandular organ is thrown out of an orphanage for requesting more dinner. Based on a Dickens novel with the songs Food, Glycogenous Food, and You've Got to Produce a Protein or Two.
Liver.
Liver.
Oliver.
Liver. Yes.
Oh. Oliver minus the O.
Right, exactly. And one that I think hits two of Karen's favorite things. The son of an atomic king attempts to reclaim his throne as leader of the charged particles.
Ion King.
The Ion King.
Lion
yes,
king.
Very good. Yeah. So all kinds of stuff. OrganGrinderMagazine.com is where you can find this.
It's really
playbook.
Fun.
Yeah,
playbook.
It's edgy playbook. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Another thing I got in our mailbox. Well, it is mysterious. Sometimes we get packages, right? And so usually they give you the slip in the PO box, and then I have to go line up and give it to the postal worker, and then they'll go find it, and then they'll bring it to me. Mm. And so I see her waddling. It's like a medium flat rate box, so it's like pretty, kind of small.
She's waddling.
Yeah, she's like...
It's like a shoebox size, right? Medium flat rate, sure.
And she lugs it over the little window and was like, "This is heavy." And I was like, okay.
Oh.
I maybe check once a month. So I was like, what?
Don't
if
normally
it's
accept wet packages.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right,
or it's like Omaha Steaks. Check
it's
it in
dog,
time.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh my God. And then I lugged it back home and I was like, okay, this is really heavy. I had no idea. And I put it on my scale. It was like almost 14 pounds.
Wow.
That's making use of that flat
rate box.
Postal Service did not make money on that transaction.
This is from Noelle Horsfield. And then I opened it up and it was filled to the brim.
Yeah.
Trivial Pursuit cards.
Oh, that's so awesome.
13 pounds of Trivial Pursuit cards.
Noelle Horsfield with an amazing name.
Yeah, we will never, ever and run out of generous. Trivial Pursuit cards.
It's like our trivia godmother.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So with that said... I'm now gonna do Pop Quiz Hotshot with our Trivial Pursuit card. So here we go. Time for our general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hotshot. So here we go. I picked a random card from the 13 pounds of cards.
bulk trivia.
And the thing is, they're all from different versions of Trivial Pursuit.
Okay, I was just gonna ask you.
So some of these might be dated. You know, this one is from Genus 4.
Okay, so that's just general trivia.
Yeah, general trivia.
All right.
So,
all
right, here we go. So I have this card. You guys have your Morning Zoo radio buzzers ready. Here we go. Blue wedge for peoples and places. People and places. Mm-hmm. What U.S. national holiday is also known as Decoration Day?
U.S. national
Decoration
holiday.
Decoration Day?
Oh.
Memorial Day?
Correct.
Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Why?
Because you're putting up in memory of people. You're decorating with, you know, the ribbons.
Or like soldiers
who decorate
and things of that nature. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Pink wedge for arts and entertainment. What Anthony Hopkins role did People magazine call the Norman Bates of the 90s? Everybody.
Hannibal Lecter.
Dr. Hannibal Lecter.
Yes. Oh. Correct.
You can go to evil medical school.
For you to call him Mr. All right. Yellow wedge for history. What Spanish explorer was beheaded and fed to vultures for treason?
Ooh.
Wait, because the vultures committed treason, they got his name on the board. Is it Cortez?
Incorrect.
Spanish explorer.
Was it Vasco da Gama?
Incorrect. Is Vasco a title? Or is that a name?
It's probably a name.
Ponce de Leon?
No.
I don't know.
It's... What? Balboa. Vasco Nunez de Balboa.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Brown wedge for science and nature. What tiresome syndrome is sometimes dubbed yuppie flu? Colin.
Chronic fatigue syndrome.
Correct.
Getting very catty in these.
Kind of judgy there.
Right.
Green wedge for sports and leisure. Who became the NBA's winningest coach ever on January 6th, 1995?
I think that was Don Nelson. Oh.
No, well, we were all looking at you. The buzz in was pro forma. Okay.
95, I think that was Don Nelson then.
Incorrect.
Okay.
You want another name?
In 95.
Name an NBA coach.
Lenny Wilkins.
Correct.
Okay. All right, there we go.
Yeah. It was like I was trying to think, like they all kind of passed each other at various places. Yeah.
Cool story, bro. Right.
Not in the Punch Bowl.
All right. Orange Wedge, wild card. What writer's romance novel did a court attendant mistakenly use to swear in a witness during a murder trial in Syracuse?
Guessing Daniel Steele?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
How did they find out?
Maybe they were like, why is the Bible pink?
I don't remember so much cleavage in the Bible.
All right. Good job, brains. So I was gone for a month. I think it's maybe time to catch up a little bit. I got a double whammy. I got tonsillitis.
Yeah.
And then I got strep throat. So that was the reason. And then also during the last month, I already logged in 100 race miles. I ran 8 races already.
Man.
Wow. And yeah. And
when you were sick like that.
When I was sick. I had to. I paid so much money. I got to do it. I got to show up.
You're a good soldier, Karen.
You got the costumes. You made all the costumes?
I made all the costumes for my race.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I got to get my money's worth. I did bump into... one of the races I ran was the inaugural Star Wars 10K in Disneyland, and I was in a ridiculous costume. And then when I finished, there was a dude there who recognized me. I was like, oh, hey, Karen. The thing is, a lot of people know me because I make costumes. He's like, I listen to Good Job Brain. And
sweet.
I was like, wow.
I'm not surprised you recognize me, but I'm surprised you recognize me for that reason.
Yeah, exactly.
I loved, by the way, and this is a wonderful piece of trivia, that you pointed out, the inaugural Star Wars 10K, they made sure the racing path crossed over New Hope Street.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know if it was. This was the next day. This was for the half marathon.
Oh, okay.
So I did the 10K and the half marathon. The only thing I stopped for and took a picture was we crossed New Hope Street. And nice. I was like, this is so clever.
Nice.
So with the sickness and then with running, I just didn't heal. And I want to thank everybody online, on Twitter, on Facebook, in email, and also in person, because for some of you guys actually did witness my condition, and it was bad. we had a lot of voice teachers or voice experts on Facebook kind of gave me steps to help me heal my voice. So thank you all for your
concern. Yeah, it's like crowdsource healing.
That's right.
And crowds were
turns out injecting horse steroids directly into her throat was the way to go.
Was the trick. So, of course, in the spirit of all this, this week we're going to talk about comebacks.
Don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm rocking my pants. Put suckers in fear. Making the tears rain down like a monsoon. Listen to the bass go boom, explosion.
I think in American life, there are like three main areas where we got comebacks all the time, right? There's sports comebacks, you know, the over-the-hill star comes back.
Yeah.
There's the political comeback, you know, you lose the big election and you come storming back years later. And then there's celebrity comebacks.
You're missing terrible fads.
Fads? Okay.
Not people.
You're right. You're right.
People.
Yeah, I guess I was really thinking about people making a comeback, but you're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fads, fashions, those also have a way of rearing their sometimes ugly heads again.
Mm-hmm.
I have a quiz for you guys about the entertainment portion of people comebacks.
Okay.
Specifically, a quiz all about acting. These are all about actors and actresses with
showing off your new voice.
Don't push it. Don't push it. We got to get through another year here.
All right.
And for the purposes of this quiz, I've kind of defined comeback as somebody who had a lot of either critical or financial success, then a period when they didn't, and then returned to a period of critical or financial success.
Okay.
And it could be for a variety of reasons.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
All right. So the diehard fans aren't out there going, what I loved.
Yeah.
All right, we'll start you off here with one that I hope won't be too difficult. Yes, please, get your buzzers ready.
All right.
And this actor was nominated for an Academy Award in 1993 and again in 2009. In between, he had a string of high-profile incidents with the law, including time behind bars and in rehab. Dana.
Robert Downey Jr.?
It is Robert Downey Jr. Yes.
Wow.
And man, I mean, talk about a comeback. The guy...
Totally.
On top of the world right now in terms of movie acting. Despite winning an Oscar in 1955, this actor had nearly a decade of flops to his name before accepting the title role in the highest-grossing film of 1972.
Hmm.
Huh.
Read that again?
Despite winning an Oscar in 1955, this actor had nearly a decade of flops to his name before accepting the title role in the highest-grossing film of 1972. This is an... Chris.
This would be Marlon Brando.
Correct.
Oh!
Right.
Yes. Marlon
Brando. Oh, he is the Godfather.
He is the Godfather. Yes. Yeah, Don Corleone.
Titular character.
I was thinking, like, the name.
Ah,
so, you know, I was like,
got
what
it.
Movie was okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a role for which he won his second Academy Award. So, indeed, put him back on the map there.
Wow,
yeah.
I didn't know it was flops.
He was a controversial choice for the role because he was just sort of in Hollywood. He was like, he's washed up. He's hard to work with, you know. That kind of
really?
Stuff.
Yeah, all of that. If you look up his run of movies in the 60s they're just notable failure after notable failure.
Well, because if you didn't know that, like, he's always talked about as being one of the greatest actors and no idea.
Yeah, it shows happy. You. It shows you, man, like one huge success can cover many small failures.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll stick with The Godfather for a minute. In that movie, I hope you guys have all seen the movie or read the book.
Yeah, Chris made me.
No.
Chris made me watch 1 and 2.
I did.
I like that. Education of a cinema fan.
I was supposed to do it for a class assignment, and I just did not.
Yeah,
I faked it.
Read the Cliff Notes.
Yeah, but now I don't remember what I...
It's really good.
Whether you like it or not, you should you should watch it, I think. You would enjoy the experience.
It's been built up so much. Yeah. It's hard to do it now.
It insists upon itself.
Okay.
In The Godfather, we see Don Corleone help win a coveted movie role for singer-actor Johnny Fontaine, who is in desperate need of his own comeback in the story world that we're watching. On what real-life singer-actor is Johnny Fontaine based? This is a very thinly veiled depiction.
Right.
Dana.
Tony Bennett.
Not Tony Bennett, but you're not that far off in terms of style.
Yeah, I believe it's Frank Sinatra.
It is. It's Frank Sinatra. Yeah. Mario Puzo, who wrote the novel, never came out and admitted this, but he also, I mean, he never denied it either. Most people accept that, Johnny Fontaine is a stand-in for Frank Sinatra, and his career in real life, Sinatra really was at a real low point before he got the role in From Here to Eternity, and he lobbied very hard to get it.
Is that the movie where, it's black and white and people make out on the beach?
Yes.
I didn't think he was in that.
He won an Academy Award
Deborah
for that
Kerr.
For a supporting role. Yeah, and depending on what stories you believe, he may or may not have had some help from powerful friends getting that role in the movie. Sure. But
what we have, right?
That's right. You use what you have. Certainly, and that got him back on top.
Hopefully, the horses were not harmed.
No horses were harmed. This former child actress had the title role. Now, don't get caught up again with title role here. All right. This former child actress had the title role in one of the most popular movies of 1991, then retired from acting for several years. Today, she is best known for her role playing a trusted advisor to a world leader on television. Karen.
Anna Chlumsky.
Yeah.
My girl in Veep.
You know, I saw, I watched a few, I didn't really get into Hannibal, the TV series, right? Yeah. But she was on that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I was like, who is that? That's a person. And look it up. Oh, it's the girl from My Girl.
Oh. Man, that movie was kind of a twist. I walked in not knowing what I'm going to watch.
This is a fun movie for kids.
Yeah. Dear God.
Well, I'm crying now.
I avoided that one as well. Did you ever read Bridge to Terabithia?
Yes. Yeah.
So it was like, they were like, it's like that. And I was like, okay, I'm not watching
that movie. Oh, I had never seen it.
That was a twist, too.
Oh, I never had anyone say that. Comparison, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Or it's like, oh, they're friends, they're having fun, they're dead.
Yeah. One of them's dead, and the other one has to live with the pain. You know, for kids.
It's for children. They're smiling on the movie poster. I thought it was going to be a feel-good hit. After numerous hit movies in the 1970s and early 80s, this actor fell into a low period before returning to glory with an Academy Award-nominated performance in 1997's Boogie Nights. Karen, briefly ahead of Chris.
Burt Reynolds.
It is Burt Reynolds. Yeah, he won a slew of nominations for that role as the producer, or the director, in the porn world of Boogie Nights. During that...
I don't think we've ever said slew on this podcast before.
I'm going to start working it in now as much as I can. During the low period there, he had an impressive 7 Razzie nominations.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Two wins, though. I don't know if that's good or bad. I don't know if you want to win the Razzie.
It's notable.
Right.
Yeah.
The story of Norma Desmond, faded star from the days of silent film, is told in this hit movie and musical. Karen again.
Sunset Boulevard.
It is Sunset Boulevard. And you guys, you may be aware, as you know, cinema fans, you know, there's the really cool parallel in Sunset Boulevard and the life of Gloria Swanson, who played the role in the original movie, in the 1950 movie, that the role of Norma Desmond, you know, sort of an actress who was kind of cast aside as eras changed only to come back late in her life, really was in many ways the story of Gloria Swanson. So it's kind of this cool meta angle to her telling the story that she had kind of an affinity with. All right, last one. Here we go. Close it out. This actress holds the record for the longest period between Emmy nominations for any performer. And I can give you some more hints here if you need them. Chris.
Betty White.
It is Betty White.
Wow. Nice.
All right, now.
Now.
Let's get it.
How long do you think between Emmy nominations for Betty White?
Ooh.
67 years.
Well, you went a little bit over. Yeah. 60 years.
Wow.
Well, she's been on television since before there was television.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if you can call it like comebacks. Like she's had so many periods of popularity over those 60 years. It's almost.
I don't feel like she went away.
Yeah. Yeah. I was gonna say like if you're that popular for that long, maybe it can't be a comeback. She's been a badass for a long time.
All right. So speaking of comebacks, you mentioned there's always a slew of failures, and comeback does kind of create this feeling or does connotate the feeling of a failure.
Yeah.
And then you come back.
You had to have a failure.
Here I have compiled a list of rejection letters of notable people of literature, music, and other pop culture, you know, facets. And what I'm going to do is do a dramatic reading, and I had to kind of edit these down, of the rejection letter, and hopefully you guys can guess who is the person being rejected.
Wow. Okay.
Who obviously went on and became super famous.
Got it.
So, for example, I'm just going to read a quick quote here. The publisher said this was too different from other juveniles on the market to warrant selling. And, this is an example, but go ahead.
Know. Is there more?
No.
That's all I get. J.K. Rowling.
Dr. Seuss.
Oh. Okay.
This was, and To Think I Saw It on Mulberry Street. So, some of these are harsh. Some of these are kind of massaged well, but there's going to be a lot of clues in these that
Dr. Seuss's whole thing was he wanted to be different from Dick and Jane, so... It was too different.
Too different.
Yeah.
This one is mean and it's so funny.
Okay.
I found your efforts to be both tedious and offensive. Oh. You really are a man's man, aren't you? I wouldn't be surprised to hear that you had penned this entire story locked up at a club, ink in one hand, brandy in the other. Your bombastic, dipsomaniac, where to now characters had me reaching for my own glass of brandy. A great story is built on a foundation of great characters. I had trouble telling yours apart. Remind me, which is the broken-hearted bachelor who travels aimlessly across Europe? Ah, yes, they all do.
Oh, man.
Broken-hearted bachelor, aimless man's man.
I can keep going.
Oh, okay.
Chris.
Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah.
Man's man. European travels.
Holding a cocktail.
Which is very accurate. Yeah.
All right. This one is quick. Nobody will want to read a book about a seagull. Oh. Chris.
I forget who the author of that is.
Oh, that's the question.
Wasn't that Swift?
Oh man.
Seagull. Yeah.
Who wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull?
Oh, was it Irving?
No. Richard Bach.
Ah. Okay.
Remember that, yeah. When I was like, oh, I know Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
Right, yeah.
I can never remember the author. Mm-hmm. Richard Bach.
What was the rejection again? It was just...
Nobody will want to read a book about a seagull.
Well, you know, hey.
Fair enough. It's
cool.
To the point.
Yeah. That book went on to sell 44 million copies. Yeah. So,
there
are
some people.
This one is from Jimmy Jenner, real name, president of Millennium Records. The production arrangement and she are very strong. The direction is a good one, in my opinion. The only thing missing from the project is the material. I like I Want You, Get Up, and High Society, but I did not like Love on the Run at all. I will pass for now, but I will wait for more.
Love on the Run. Oh, who is that? It was...
The song names are I Want You, Get Up, High Society, and Love on the Run. And the funny thing is, you know, this guy, Jimmy Jenner, said, the only thing missing from this project is the material.
Madonna.
Correct. It is Madonna.
Yeah, it's like, we just got to get you better songwriters. We got to get you better songwriters is what they're saying,
it's
right?
Not like, it's not like she sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We like the package. We like the package.
And last one. Oh, man. Last one. This is from one of the publishers. The girl doesn't, it seems to me, have a special perception or feeling which would lift that book above the curiosity level.
The girl is the character in the book?
Yes. And also the author.
Oh. I was going to say Alice in Wonderland.
Little House on the Prairie?
Nope.
Oh, good guess, though.
Nonfiction.
The girl is also the author.
The girl doesn't, seems to me, have a special perception or feeling which would lift that book above the curiosity level. This person probably ate his words.
Is a girl interrupted?
No, this is the Diary of Anne Frank.
Oh my god.
Well, all right.
Well, yeah.
It doesn't seem to just feel.
Wow.
It doesn't grab me beyond the curiosity factor.
Yeah.
That's a harsh review to have to live down. To have your name associated. Not even review, the rejection.
You know what?
She didn't come with that.
Yeah, true. Well, yeah. No, it did. It's a rejection letter. Yeah. Right,
of her diary. Yeah. It's weird.
But I guess her book did come back.
It just goes to show you don't, listen to that first rejection letter. The fifth or sixth rejection letter.
Oh, I have a funny one, actually. So try to guess what company wrote this templated rejection letter.
Okay. Oh, okay.
This company gets submissions and would
push out. They get so many submissions, they have a form letter. All right.
Dear contributor, sorry, but we've got bad news. You've been rejected. Don't take this personally, though. All of us feel rejected at one time or another. At least, that's what our group therapist tells us here. He says we shouldn't worry about it. Besides, although you've been rejected, things could have been a lot worse. Your material might have been accepted. Then where would you be?
Huh. Mad Magazine.
Correct.
Oh, all right, there we go.
And then it goes, so that should be your attitude. What? Me worry? So it's like kind of cheeky, uplifting.
I'm sure that, Mad Magazine gets like so many unsolicited submissions from randos.
Kids.
Kids. Kids. Kids.
Kids are randos.
Yep. Yeah, that's true.
That's right. Very much like Colin, I have also prepared a quiz, and that quiz is about comebacks, but very specifically about musical comebacks. And in fact, comeback albums, when a musician releases album after album that doesn't chart or does not do nearly as well as their previous success, and then has one album that, whatever the magical formula is, it roars back up onto the charts and, sort of cements their place in the pantheon of the pantheon.
Okay. The actual pantheon, yes.
This is drawn from Time Magazine, did a list of the top 10 comeback albums ever, and Guitar World also did a similar list, and so I'm relying on their expertise, not mine.
All right.
No complaints.
Okay. Yeah.
As chosen by the staffs of Time and Guitar World. Here we go, comeback albums, the quiz. Mm-hmm. Got your buzzers ready. In 1993, this singer came back with a vengeance, releasing a sequel to his breakout 1977 solo debut.
Wow.
It is an album that has a Roman numeral 2 at the end of it.
No.
Okay, so
I was gonna guess Eric Clapton Unplugged.
So someone who was in a band. So it's not Michael Jackson.
It is named after his first solo album with a two at the end of it,
right?
And was a big comeback success.
I don't know.
Not Michael Jackson.
Know.
It's not Peter Frampton. It's not.
I give you a hint. There's some in my freezer right now.
Steakums?
Yes.
Teething rings. Ice cream.
It is
not Ice Cube. It is the phenomenal and tasty Meatloaf. Bat Out of Hell.
Bat Out of Hell
2.
And he would do anything for love.
Certainly would.
But he won't do that.
Oh
man, that song was
Steakums was close.
Steakums
was close. Rap and hip-hop producer Rick Rubin revitalized the declining career of this country legend when he produced his 1994 album, American Recordings. Colin.
That's Johnny Cash.
That is Johnny Cash.
Makes sense.
Oh.
It was, I believe, his 80th album.
Wow.
He was slipping down the charts. American Recordings, in which he basically cover songs of more modern bands and produced by Rick Rubin, was huge. After the master tapes to an album that would have been called Cigarettes and Valentines were stolen, the band decided to create this album instead, which proved a huge comeback in 2004.
Huh.
Wow.
They finished their album Cigarettes and Valentines, but the master tapes were stolen. Instead of remaking it, they decided to create a totally new album in 2004. And I'm looking for the name of the album.
Oh, who was this? Yeah.
Because if I tell you the band, it's going to be too easy.
Well, I remember
they're smashing... local.
They're local.
They're local.
Oh,
Green Day?
It is Green Day.
Oh.
It is Green Day. American Idiot.
That makes sense.
American Idiot.
Well, fate worked out for them.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Thank God that got stolen. Otherwise, they wouldn't have then the album and then the Broadway.
And the musical. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's true. Right.
It's true.
After the tragic deaths of two of this band's members back to back, they found themselves back at the top of the charts with the album Brothers and Sisters. Colin.
Isn't that the Allman Brothers?
That is the Allman Brothers, yes.
Oh, what happened?
They lost two members of their band in back-to-back motorcycle accidents.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Oh, they didn't, it wasn't one accident and they both died.
No. Oh, yeah. No, it was two totally incidents. Unrelated.
Oh,
yeah, I know. Well, unrelated except for, you know,
right, motorcycles. Yes.
Featuring What's Love Got to Do With It, this album represented the beginning of Tina Turner's solo success in the 1980s.
What is the album?
Was the name of the album...
No, it wasn't What's Love Got to Do With It. Oh, sorry.
Was the name of the album Private Dancer?
It was, yes.
Okay.
Private Dancer, yes. Okay. Yep. This album was released in 1980 to poor reviews, many of which were withdrawn following the death of one of the artists.
Ooh.
Whoa!
1980.
Oh.
It won Album of the Year at the 1981 Grammys.
Whoa! All because one dude died.
When did John Lennon die? Was it?
It was the year Beatles? 1980.
Was it the Beatles?
What is the album?
Oh.
Because he had famously quit the Beatles by that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, what is the
final
comeback?
What is the name of the album?
Was it Imagine?
It was not Imagine, no. It's John Lennon and Yoko Ono.
Oh, okay. Wait, so it was...
Is the one where they're naked and...
It is not. No, this one is Double Fantasy.
Yes.
Okay. Double Fantasy came out, was given a lot of poor reviews. John Lennon was murdered shortly thereafter, and a lot of the reviews were withdrawn.
Yeah. They're like, oh, you're not going to get better. This was good. Yeah. This was very good.
That's right. You know what?
Let's continue your legacy.
It was great.
Right. Like, feedback won't help us anymore.
Yeah. Yep. Here's a Grammy. I don't know any of the songs, but here's a good... This 1997 Bob Dylan album, his first studio album in 7 years, won Album of the Year at that year's Grammys also.
Oh, 97.
97.
It was
big,
like,
comeback for
is
him.
Is it Philadelphia? Like,
no,
it was Bob Dylan.
It was like Sunset River
or something, or...
I don't know. He's another guy with 80 albums. He's got so many.
It's true. This is a good one to know because of what it represented for him kind of coming back. Time Out of Mind.
Ah, okay.
Time Out of Mind is the name of of that album. Okay. Yeah.
Isn't there an R.E.M. album, Out of Time?
Yes. Yeah.
Time Out of Mind.
Cyndi Lauper's Time After Time.
Oh.
None of which have any
muddy the waters here.
Now I'm not going to remember the band.
Time Out of Mind.
With his album, Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah.
I got this one, guys. We studied this in trivia. Yeah.
As a concept album, it was great, yeah. Brian Wilson roared back into the spotlight when he finished this legendary unreleased Beach Boys record and released it as a solo project in 2004. Mm-hmm. Karen.
Smile?
Smile, yes.
Mm-hmm. I only know this because Chris made me listen to it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sensing a theme here today, yeah.
Chris makes Karen listen.
I'm very gullible, yeah.
But that's over our, like, 10-year relationship. It's only been those two things.
Yeah. Smile and The Godfather.
And The Godfather.
Has it only been the two things? It seems like a weird coincidence that they both come up.
The Godfather took a while. Godfather took, like, years of, like,
right.
You gotta see.
No, it's really good.
It's
really good. I don't want to watch a movie about criminals and murder.
I know there's like a horse and
okay. The horse. That was really the hump that
had
to get over.
Yeah, that was the hump. I didn't care about James Caan, like, getting shown.
So, final question. Released in 2005, this Mariah Carey album represented her major comeback after the commercial flops Glitter and Charm Bracelet. Everybody,
Butterfly?
Butterfly?
No.
Then it's the other one.
Well, wait.
2008.
Is it the Rainbows one?
No, that's before. This is the E equals MC squared.
No. I can tell you.
What is it?
It is the Emancipation of Mimi. Yes.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was comeback. Technically, as voted on by
Time and Guitar World.
I want to talk to them about it. Yeah. I would like to discuss it.
There's some good songs.
I'm not
going to
say they're wrong, but I feel like we should, you know.
Definitely leave a
There's
comment.
Discussion.
Yeah. Yep, yep.
All right, from the high heights of laughing at Mariah Carey and talking about music, I'm going to bring it down. I'm going to bring I'm talking about comebacks of diseases.
Oh, the stuff you don't want to come back. Yeah.
Things you thought were over, things that ravaged humanity, and we cured them, and now they're back. Like, that's what I want to talk about.
Oh, fun.
Good times.
Good times.
So it's a quiz. Buzz in with your answer. Buzz in excitedly, cheerfully.
We have to say the name of the disease really like...
As enthusiastically as possible.
Let's do that. Let's do that.
Okay.
All right. First one. People who have died from this disease include Vincent Van Gogh's brother, Winston Churchill's father, and Al Capone. It was nearly eradicated in the U.S., but it's coming back because of due to lack of education.
Syphilis. Yes. Da, 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 da.
Wait.
Syphilitic fever.
So people don't know that
it's sexually transmitted.
Well, they know it's sexually transmitted. They don't know that you can catch it orally.
Got it.
There you go. Mm-hmm. That's all.
It, by all accounts, syphilis is a terrible, terrible way to die. Yeah.
Because it's like you're syphilis, rot or something, right? Like,
drove him crazy, from what I've heard. Yeah.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I'm crazy. Not-
All right. So this illness was really prominent in the 1800s in industrialized cities where children worked in factories and had poor diets and got little sunlight. And it's coming back because children have poor diets and don't go outside. Colin.
Rickets.
Rickets.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
That sounds like an old-timey.
It does. I didn't know really Rickets was coming back. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
I was going to say scurvy.
Go outside. Get some vitamin D.
Yep.
Oh, I see. Okay. So the sunlight wasn't like a judgment call. It's actually they were not getting sunlight.
And that's the one that's symptomatic of the bone deformation, right? Is that...
Yeah, and I think the rash.
Oi.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Go outside.
Rickets!
Yeah. Rickets!
It kind of sounds like a fun candy.
Yeah, it does. Razzles.
Yeah. Ooh, those strawberry rickets.
So a character from Little House on the Prairie had this disease and went blind. The character in Little Women had it and got ill. It was treatable with penicillin, but now it's coming back.
Scarlet fever!
Scarlet fever.
Yay!
Wait, it's coming back how?
There are cases in China and Macau right now.
Oh.
It's viral. So.
Wow. The bad kind of viral.
Yeah.
The original kind of viral.
Yeah.
I had no idea all these diseases were.
I know.
Yeah. And I would stay inside if I weren't for fear of catching rickets. Yeah.
Scarlet fever has a really great social media team, apparently.
These three diseases were basically eradicated in the 1960s, but they are, in the last decade or so, they've been really making a comeback, and especially on college campuses.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll name one.
Okay. Sure.
Meningitis.
No.
Oh.
Gonorrhea.
No.
On college campuses?
Yeah.
You have to be excited.
Oh, yeah.
I mean...
How excited is he going to get about gonorrhea?
How excited is he going to get?
So
the reason why these three are grouped together is they were grouped into one vaccine.
Is it measles, mumps, rubella?
It is.
Oh, it is. Okay.
And so the thing is, in 1998, there was that article that said, vaccines are linked to autism. And it was like thoroughly disproved by the medical community.
Yeah. Right.
But people who are now in college
were that generation
around right there.
Oh,
yeah.
So this is like the delayed effect.
Yeah.
Wow. So it's measles, mumps, and what?
Rubella.
Well, there's the measles outbreak in Disneyland.
Yeah, there you go.
That's right.
Yeah, and a lot of kids didn't have vaccines.
It's with little children, but UC Berkeley a couple years ago had a big, I think Mumps outbreak.
There was this year in the National Hockey League, there was a mumps outbreak that started localized in one team and sort of spread to other teams. Yeah,
it's because all these, when they were kids, they weren't.
I never even thought about that part of it, but that's got to be right. Because again, a lot of the guys in the NHL are going to be young, you know.
Other countries are less good about vaccinating people, but they were like, oh, that makes sense that people who are 18, 19, 20.
Now.
Yeah.
Yay! Yay!
Good job.
Well, you know, that actually that sparked a good segue here for me. So I was reading, this was sometime last year, about that we're sort of entering the Shaquille boom in naming. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So because, you know, Shaquille O'Neal, the world famous pro basketball player, like he was at the height of his appeal, you know, 18 to 20 years ago. So we're starting to see sort of the influx, and you'll see it like in you know, college athletes. You'll see a lot more Shaquilles now. Yep. And it's pretty clear who they're named after. it's a traditional Irish family name.
Michael's easier to like pretend it wasn't for Michael Jordan.
Or first name Jordan.
There was a spike of Jordan naming, in the mid to late 90s for sure. Yeah. Which all of which sets me up to a story I would like to tell about Michael Jordan. So I'll start you guys off with a trivia question here. This is not a trick. I'm not setting you guys up. We've had this trivia question at Pub Quiz before. We've probably even had it on these very airwaves.
Still might be a trick.
It's not a trick. I'm not trying to fool you. How many times did Michael Jordan retire?
Three.
Yes, he retired.
Okay. Magic of threes, man. Don't you remember?
Right. Yeah, three is always the answer.
He retired three times, which, of course, means that sandwiched in among those retirements were two comebacks. Comeback before you can retire again, right? Riding the comeback retirement roller coaster there. But let's back up just for a bit. In case you're not a sports fan out there in podcast land, maybe you've never heard of Michael Jordan. It's possible. In case you do not know who Michael Jordan was, he was a professional basketball player. He was pretty good. Many people would consider him the best ever. You know, you may have your favorites if you don't like him or the Bulls, but you could argue he was the greatest ever. And significantly for my story, Michael Jordan wore, quite famously, number
23.
Okay. Even making eye contact, and I was like,
I knew Karen knew that one. Okay. Yeah, number 23. And like he is so strongly associated with the number 23 that, again, speaking of like wave effects, you know, like the reason that LeBron James wears number 23 is in part an homage to Michael Jordan.
Oh, really?
There are generations of young kids growing up playing basketball.
I thought it was like randomly.
They would choose number 23 because they want to be like Mike. They're like, oh, Jordan wore 23. I'm going to wear 23.
Well, good thing LeBron James is really good, too.
Yeah, it helps that he can make it his own number. Chicago Bulls of the 1990s, pretty good. In fact, they won the NBA championship in 1991. They won it again in 1992. They won it again in 1993.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then shockingly, not long before the 93-94 season started, Jordan announced that he was retiring from pro basketball. Hanging it up. He was 30 at the top of his career, no doubt about it. People were shocked, like, why would you want to do this? And he was going to go play baseball. And you guys may even remember this.
Yes.
That's right. He was like, I'm done basketball for a while. I'm going to play baseball. And they found him. Coincidentally, it helped.
Like, just taking on that next challenge, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, luckily for him, the same man who owned the Chicago Bulls owned the Chicago White Sox. So he found a spot for him in the farm team there. He was, you know, minor leagues. He wasn't good enough to play major leagues. He was good. I mean, he was an all-around good athlete, and he did play baseball growing up. So it wasn't just like, oh, I'm going to give this a try. Like, he actually knew what he was doing.
What a funny, interesting stick and a tiny car.
Where's the net?
There are nets.
How many points?
I just
need to
right over there.
There is a little more background to this at the time, and this part is not, you know, funny in any sense. You know, one of the reasons he stepped away was before the start of the next season, his father was killed in what was essentially a botched robbery, a botched car theft. And it was terrible, just an awful scene for many reasons. And he was devastated, as anyone would be. And it also got him thinking about sports and just what it meant to him. You know, he's like,
what else do I have to do in basketball? He's like, I've been the MVP. I've been boring. The scoring championship. Yeah. What else do I have to prove?
Too easy now.
It was. Yeah. There was some flavor of that. Feeling maybe a little bit burned out. And then also, you know, his father had always wanted to see him play baseball, you know, growing up as, you know, so this was kind of like a tribute in a way, just to clear his mind, get away. So he played minor league baseball for about a season and a half, and he was decent, you know, good, not great. Probably wouldn't have had the spot that he had if he hadn't been Michael Jordan.
Right, yeah.
But still better than your average Joe by far.
I would say he was probably average among his peers. He did. Oh, okay. He was not a superstar in baseball. He was average among his peers.
Good marketing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean,
but, like, you know? He could do it. Like, he could play baseball.
Yeah, you can't put me in there and I'd be like, what do I?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
they're throwing it really fast.
I don't like flying balls in my face.
But no, Dana, you got it right. It's great marketing as well. Yeah. Like, you know, attendance went up everywhere he went. So while he was playing baseball, he wore number 45 on his jersey. And that number had a lot of significance for him growing up. He had an older brother. And, you know, Michael Jordan growing up had wanted to have 45. His brother took it. So one of the reasons that he settled for 23, the story goes, his story is that, well, I divided 45 in half and rounded up. So 23.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, it was kind of cute. So now that he had the chance to wear 45, he wore it while he was playing baseball. And the Bulls, in his absence, they did good. They did good. Not great. They didn't win the title the next year.
They suffered.
They went pretty far in the playoffs, but losing the greatest player on the planet, you're going to have some drop off, even, you know, with a lot of other talent. So the second season after he was retired, the Bulls were struggling even a little bit more. They were had like a 500 record. They were not doing great. And then dramatically, Michael Jordan decided to come back to basketball.
Save his team?
Well, you know, part of it was, yeah, he gets to ride in on the white horse and be the savior. He very famously announced his return with a two-word press release that just said, I'm back. And, you know, this is like just early enough. This wasn't like all over the internet. This is like 1994, you know, so this was over the wire services and every sports writer just, you know, the head explodes like, oh, Michael Jordan's coming back.
I bet they all sounded just like that, too.
little Colin.
I was excited, yeah. So he came back, you know, halfway through the season.
Not even,
he came back halfway through, rejoined his teammates. They, of course, found room for him on the roster.
Oh, yeah.
You got to try it out again.
Yeah, right.
I would love that if he showed up and they're like, listen, sorry, Mike.
You're going to have to ride the bench. You're coming in like the new one.
Water boy. Yeah. He's just like carefully arranging the Gatorade cups. He's real good at it.
I got to prove myself.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
He's like trying to catch. Hey, coach, yeah, I'm doing a good job, right, coach? They made a pretty good run deep into the playoffs that season. He came back and he was wearing, as I say, number 45. He came back. He carried over his 45 into basketball. So as I say, they went pretty deep into the playoffs, but they lost the first game of the conference semifinals, which is a big deal. And for whatever reason, he wasn't feeling the mojo. Some of the players on the other team, one of the other players even made a comment like, oh, you know, number 23, that wouldn't have happened. That number 45 doesn't look like number 23.
Oh, snap.
And if you know anything about Michael Jordan, you know this is one competitive dude. Mm-hmm. And so I think that kind of got under his skin. But he also just separately wanted to switch numbers. Kind of rumbling started. So he said, you know, I think I'm going to go back to number 23. But so here's the problem. When you're playing in a league season, you tell the league office, here are our roster of players, here are the numbers they're going to wear. And that's basically set in stone. It's a big deal. You can't just change willy-nilly. For that season.
Yeah.
Exactly. Part of it has to do with, quite frankly, the fact that league sells a lot of merchandise. And if you're changing numbers around, it makes it tough for them. That's part of it. Other is just record keeping.
Marketing is
big.
Okay. It's a big part of it.
They are a business. So game two rolls around of the series, and he takes off his warm-ups to reveal a number 23 jersey. And, you know, he kind of knew he wasn't supposed to do this, but he's like, I don't care, I'm Michael Jordan. He's like, I'm going back to number 23.
What are they
going to
do?
The league wasn't happy, and they fined the team $25,000. They were very clear. They're like, you know, you can't do this. You're messing
just
with our system. And his team, to the credit, the Bulls supported him. Yeah. His coach, Phil Jackson, at the time, they supported him. All his teammates supported him.
Yeah, but
he's like, I don't care. $25,000 is nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
So he's like, I don't care. I'm gonna do it again. So the next came around. He wore 23. He wore number 23 again the next game, and they fined him $25,000 again. And he said, I don't care. I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah,
the next game came around. He wore number 23 again.
They were winning.
They were. It was a tight series. They eventually lost that series, unfortunately. Okay. They lost.
This is not the feel-good ending.
Oh, yeah. Not
before racking up $100,000 in fines for the team just for wearing his old number. But he wasn't going to back down. He was not going to back down. Yeah. So they lost that series. They did not win a title again that second year that he, you know, had come back. So before the next season started, they went through all the official channels, changed it back, his official number 23, and they went on to win three more NBA titles.
Wow.
They won 1996, 1997, 1998, and then he retired for the second time.
Then he came back.
You know, we just prefer not to talk about that last one.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really?
It wasn't.
He came back in 2001. So his second comeback, he was old compared to most people on an NBA roster. This is when he was with the Washington Wizards.
Yeah.
In his 40s.
And he had started as an executive with the team. And it was kind of one of those things like the team was not doing well. And
he just
it was
takes
like,
his suit off.
Yeah, fine.
He's like, I've done it before. Like, he just writes number 23 on his shirt.
The scenario you're describing is only marginally less comical than what it really was. Yeah. He's like, yeah, this team is underperforming. He's like, you know who we need out there on that court? We need me out on there on that court. So, and I felt bad for the coach of the
league. Takes his low-dose aspirin.
Well, imagine. Right. He comes down there with his newspaper under his arm. I felt bad for the coach of the team. Imagine, because Michael Jordan was the coach's boss, as well as being played for him. Yeah, because he still had to, you know, I mean, it was not a good scenario. Yeah, that lasted a couple years. He retired again, thankfully, for the last time.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love these basketball stories. It reminds me of the other story, I think on our cheating episode, where you talk about Jason Kidd throwing a soda on the slippery. Like, it's so ridiculous.
The gamesmanship that goes on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, on the court, like, breakaway suit. Man. Wow. That was a show.
That was a show.
That was our comeback show.
We came back.
Yeah, we did. We did. Thank you guys for joining me. Thank you guys, listeners, for listening in and being patient and, you know, waited until my voice is back. Thank you guys so much. Not like you guys had a choice, because there was...
I recorded 40 hours of my one-man show.
I wouldn't hear that.
Just calling.
Yeah.
It was
like... You doing walking impressions.
Stream of consciousness, you know, just musings on man's place in the universe.
Some of my poetry.
Yeah.
I hope you guys learn a lot about different types of viral comebacks, and also Michael Jordan. And you can find our show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.